November 24th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 200. I'm Matt Cleve, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, front-end dev, Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Matt. How are you doing?
Great. Hey, it's the 200th episode. Can you believe it?
And it's not only 200, it's a year past Drupal 8 release.
Happy anniversary, Mike.
Yes, and it's our anniversary. We started this on the day that Drupal 8 was released. So yeah, it's one.
Yeah, so this is the Lullabot Podcast. We talk about all things Lullabot.
Yep. What is Lullabot?
Lullabot's a strategy, design, and development company that does a lot of web development work, often in the Drupal world, using Drupal.
What exactly is Drupal?
Drupal's a PHP web content management system and framework.
Yeah. All right.
And so I suppose for a web development and Drupal podcast, we can't get any better than the guests we have today.
I agree with you.
We're going to be talking about the past, present, and future of Drupal.
It's a very big topic.
First, let's introduce a Lullabot that's going to be with us today. He's a senior developer who's the co-maintainer of the Drupal 8 configuration system. He's an organizer of the Twin Cities Drupal Camp from Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's the creator of the Hacking Culture podcast on lullabot.com. You can find that. He's very passionate about free open source software and the Drupal community. He's written some articles about that. Hi, Dr. Matthew Tift. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Glad to have you on.
Secondly, we have user ID number one on Drupal.org, the founder and project lead of the Drupal project and the co-founder and CTO of Acquia. Welcome, Dries Poytaert.
Good morning.
Hey, Dries.
Glad to be back. Yeah, it's good to be back.
It's good afternoon for you, right?
It is afternoon. I'm currently in Europe, so it's 4 o'clock.
All right.
Thanks for coming back on the Lullabot podcast. If we look back through the archives, you've been on a couple of times.
That is right. I'm trying to remember when was the last time. I feel like it's been over a year now.
It's been a while. So, yeah. And you know, 10 years ago, you were on talking about this very same topic, the past, present, and future of Drupal.
10 years ago?
10 years ago, June 19th, 2006. Yeah.
Wow.
So do you think the past and present probably have changed?
It would be interesting to listen to it again and see what I told you guys about the future.
Yeah. So we would like to officially extend an invitation for a podcast for 2026, if you're available.
I'll be there. Sign me up.
All right.
Let's just jump right in. Dries, how has Drupal changed over the last 10 years?
Quite. Well, I mean, like, what hasn't changed, right? I mean, that's changed so much. 10 years ago, let's see, 2006, I was still in college writing my dissertation. I remember at the time, some larger companies were starting to use Drupal, and they would often run into challenges. and so I remember spending time at night helping them get their site working properly. And it's around that time that I started to think about starting my own company after I finished my dissertation. So that was 10 years ago, roughly, for me, around this time.
Yeah, there's a lot. I think what we were at maybe 4.6 or 4.7 around then. Is that about right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So are the... Do you have anything that you're specifically proud of, like regarding Drupal within the past 10 years that you want to talk about?
In the last 10 years, I mean, there's a lot of things. I'm probably most proud of sort of what we've accomplished together, to be honest, like to see the impact that Drupal has on individuals, on organizations, on, you know, even people that are indirectly using Drupal. That's probably what I'm most proud of. But there's also been sort of some notable site launches in the last 10 years. And, you know, the number one that comes to mind would be whitehouse.gov, you know, adopted Drupal in, I think it was 2009. And that was, of course, a huge testament to, you know, to Drupal and open source in terms of scalability, security, sort of, you know, big site readiness, let's say, of Drupal. And I think that has been a huge tipping point or milestone for Drupal as a whole.
I remember sitting at DrupalCon and somebody was talking about, you know, the WhiteHouse.gov launch, and somebody made the observation, hey, at this point, nobody gets fired by recommending Drupal anymore because there's some momentum behind it.
Yeah, that's very true. And I thought it was really, really awesome that they were contributing modules back to the ecosystem.
That's right. That happened a few years later, I think. Which is not unusual.
Yeah, and even recently I saw that they contributed, like, I think a Drupal bot or something like that, like a some type of integration with a messaging bot. Is that correct?
Yeah, they did an integration with a Facebook chatbot for citizens to basically contact the president.
it's pretty cool. So let's talk about like mistakes. Everybody's human. What mistakes has Drupal made or have you made within the past 10 years that if you had a time machine, you would go back and maybe like give yourself, you know, some advice?
Wow, that's a hard question. I mean, I feel like so much of the journey was overcoming obstacles and making mistakes, you know, and learning from your mistakes. You know, there's a few things that I've learned, and you can call them mistakes or lessons learned that, you know, so it's up to you.
Yeah.
But I think I've learned, like in the early days, I felt it was all about the quality of the code and the quality of the user experience was less important than the quality of the code. And I think I've come around to that. You know, now I feel like the quality of the user experience is really, really, really important, and probably more important than the quality of the code, for better or worse. That's kind of a big learning, I guess. Maybe a very obvious one now, but at the time, that was not so obvious for me. I feel maybe a second one, you know, I feel like maybe in the past I could have been, let's say, more clear about at least my vision for Drupal and being more explicit in sort of goal setting for the community. Like in the beginning, I wasn't sure if that's what people wanted or if that was the right thing to do. And I think over the years I've tried to do more of that and spent more time from writing code myself to being more of an organizer and trying to paint a picture and hopefully inspire people to, you know, to go after a picture, you know, to work towards that goal. And from organizing things in initiatives to, you know, these kinds of things. So, and, you know, looking back, I'm not sure, obviously, would be curious to hear what you guys think, actually. Maybe I should have done more of that earlier. Just a thought. It's hard to say, I guess.
Yeah. It's always kind of hard and difficult to look back and think what you would change. And but at the same time, Drupal is so successful. You know, you don't know if that would have adversely affected where we are.
Right. So, exactly. Yeah. You know, other than those things, there's also maybe technical mistakes that we've made. Like we've put certain modules in Drupal core over the years that haven't worked out, like maybe OpenID, which at the time sounded like a great idea, but, you know, didn't quite work out the way that we had hoped it would work out. So you can call these mistakes if you'd like. I kind of like to think of them as failed experiments. Yeah. I don't regret doing these things, but, you know, in a way they're little failures, I guess, as well.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, during your DrupalCon Los Angeles Dries note, you talked about the history of Drupal, which I thought was like really, really fantastic because I've always been, you know, interested in that type of stuff. Has anything happened? Like, do you have any maybe top top one or two pivotal moments in the history of Drupal that kind of took it from just like any old PHP content management system to where it is today?
Yeah, there has been many. I mean, at least some of them are maybe personal, but I mean, the first big tipping point for me was Howard Dean, presidential candidate in, you know, 2000, well, for the 2004 elections, but this all played out in 2003. Mm-hmm. He adopted Drupal to be the first presidential candidate to ever really leverage the internet to campaign, you know, to do online campaigning. That was a real pivotal moment for Drupal, because Drupal got mentioned in the press. You know, I remember there being articles in the Wall Street Journal, and a couple of books were written as well about the campaign and how it was revolutionary, let's say. So that was one thing. You know, we had our first ever Drupal conference in 2005, I believe it was, and about 40 people showed up. And it was such a tipping point. Like, it was the first time that we all sort of got together and spent a whole week talking about Drupal. It was very hard to believe. And out of that conference came lots of great things. We spent a lot of time talking about CCK, and you know, Robert Douglas and I, you know, talked at length, and I sort of convinced him to quit his job and write a Drupal book. And that Drupal book, that Drupal book was also a huge milestone, because all of a sudden there was a book, you know, on Drupal. It was actually a book on three open source projects, Drupal being one of them. But that sort of sent a signal to the world, like, you know, there's a book about Drupal, so that means it's no longer just like, you know, this scrappy hobby project. You know, it must be real. And so at the time, that was a huge milestone. Obviously, today there's, I don't know, maybe 100 books on Drupal. And so, you know, if you look back, these things always look kind of small, I guess, compared to today's things. But at the time, that was a big deal. We had a big server crash in 2005 as well. You know, needed to raise money to buy a new server, and lots of people chipped in. I mean, I've told this story before, but that was a huge tipping point in sort of the creation of the larger community, at least in my mind. You know, we talked about the White House adopting Drupal. That was huge. And so these are sort of times in history that mattered. And again, on the technical side, there's things like, you know, the node system. That was kind of a big tipping point in a way. We probably didn't know it at the time, but looking back, that was kind of a key decision. Or views, you know, being created. These kinds of things have been instrumental as well. So yeah, lots of those.
I was listening to this and thinking back to 2006, when I had just started at Wisconsin Public Radio, also finishing my dissertation at the time. And I was working on a dissertation in musicology, but I was just as much an AIDS activist at the time. I was organizing AIDS benefit concerts, AIDS rides, working on the HIV Prevention Planning Council in Wisconsin. And I had lots of ideas about like what grassroots organizing was at the time. And at Wisconsin Public Radio, where I was working, I was sort of disappointed that we were using proprietary software. And that was how I first found out about Drupal, is because I was looking for alternatives that seemed to fit better with the mission of the Wisconsin Public Radio. And I quickly found that lots of other nonprofits and grassroots organizations had been inspired. There was lots of mentions of what Dries had talked about with the Dean Space and that initiative, and how it helped bring people together using technology. But one of the main benefits I think people were noticing was like the principle of it, the community, how people were working together. So as a result, lots of people in public radio got into using Drupal, and then I helped lead the transition for all of Wisconsin Public Radio's web properties over to Drupal. And in a lot of people in the public radio community sort of took note of that. As one example, we our first site that we switched over was called this site called To the Best of Our Knowledge, and it gave them a great way to take this excellent work that they were doing, telling stories with interviews and making it more easily searchable. And we ended up talking with a lot of other stations about that because they just saw this tremendous power in this free software that also happened to align with their ideals. So that's kind of how I got into Drupal.
It's awesome.
So let's pull it back to the present here. So what does an average day look like for you, Dries? I mean, I understand that you don't do coding anymore and that you're more painting the picture. What do you do? What exactly?
What would you say you do here?
What exactly do you do here?
Tell us more. I'm not sure if there's an average day. I do a lot of things. Let's see. But first of all, I work long days, I should say that. And most of my days are filled with meetings. It's not unusual for me to have 10 or 15 meetings even every day. And when I don't have meetings, I'm usually traveling. So I do travel a lot. And so, you know, your next question is going to be, what are these meetings about? And it's a little bit of everything. So I guess at the highest level, I split my time, professionally between Drupal and Acquia, mm-hmm. right? And so within Drupal, you guys probably know more or less what I do, but I spend time evangelizing Drupal. I spend time, I actually spend a good amount of time writing, you know, on my blog. I try to, you know, lead really.
Yeah. It
may sound funny, but I try to share my thoughts and have conversations with people. I have meetings with the core committers, the Drupal 8 core committers or the Drupal 7 core committers. And we talk about different things, specific issues or policies that we want to change. I'm the chairman of the Drupal Association, and every week I spend several hours helping the Drupal Association, talking to Megan, talking to members of our board of directors, running board meetings, financial committees. I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to the Drupal Association as well. Lots of different things on the Drupal site, I would say, from sort of, you know, vision to maybe strategy and thinking about key features for Drupal to talking to people to unblocking people to, Drupal Association stuff. And on the Acquia side of things, I have a comparable role. So that's a lot of setting the strategy for the company, helping different teams do sales-related things, customer calls. I help with the messaging and the marketing and how we want to present ourselves or fundraising when we're raising money or, having our board meetings and talking to investors and, you know, all of these things. So my role is, both on Drupal and on the Acquia side is kind of super interesting, at least for me, because I get to do so many different things and every day looks, looks very different. I do try to do a little bit of coding still. And actually do really miss coding.
Yeah.
Because it's always a lot of fun when I do it, but, I actually feel sad often that I don't get to code. But the way I rationalize it is, I can spend my time coding, but I'm not sure that's in the best interest of Drupal, meaning my time is probably better spent making sure that the Drupal Association is doing well, or that I can unblock people. Like if I unblock, 10 people in half an hour, that's going to be much more impactful than me writing code. And so I'm in this position I've grown to be in this position where, you know, that is true, you know, that I can be more impactful by doing other things than coding. So the only coding I do is on my personal blog. I've been migrating it to Drupal 8.
So did you build your blog out? Is it boitart.net? Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you build that out yourself?
I did.
Did you do all the theming too?
No. I was going to say. So I ported my modules. I have some custom modules to do my albums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The migration myself. There's a couple of things I had to fix around the migration. And then I started doing the theme. And that was actually a lot of fun because, so here's the thing, like you work on Drupal 8 for 4.5 years and you see all these bits and pieces come by in the issue queue. But that doesn't mean that all of a sudden, you know how to write a module and all of these things. And mm-hmm. So it's actually been really helpful for me to write a couple of modules to do a migration and to start building a theme. On the theme, the truth is I'm horrible at CSS. Mm-hmm. And so I asked, Preston So, who works on my team at Acquia to help me with the CSS and some of the finishing touches on the Twig templates as well.
Nowadays, especially with some of the big events going on in the world and some of the reactions to those, I've been thinking a lot about the role of Drupal as a force for public good. And, you know, there's lots of these big organizations like, for example, Oxfam is a global movement where they're trying to end poverty and inequality and discrimination. And, you know, they chose Drupal for their site. And, you know, there's lots of examples like that. So when I see organizations like that and I wonder how they do that, but I also think about the, you know, local organizations and what Drupal means to them, like how easy it is for me to spin up a website for friends of mine if they want to get their message out. But I know, well, here's sort of a random example maybe, but Oxfam published a study they had recently talking about tax havens, and they talked about how there's $151 billion in offshore subsidies just for the worst offender, which was Apple, and like $1.4 trillion in these tax havens, and how companies like Apple have said they don't want to pay their tax bill. They want a discount before they bring their money back for the people of the United States. And, you know, things like that, I hear a story like that and I get sort of upset. And I think like, well, the companies that I work with and the people that I know have to pay their taxes. And then, you know, I imagine people sort of organizing in response to that. And I imagine them grabbing their iPhones or iMessaging their friends or setting up a Facebook page. And to me, that kind of response that I'm seeing more and more it seems sort of antithetical or in opposition to this idea of people getting together to work against some of these injustices they might see in the world. And I love that Drupal can be such a good tool for building community. So I keep thinking about different ways that we can continue to promote that aspect of our community, nonprofit organizations and other organizations working to use free software, including Drupal, for the public good and build on all the work that we've been doing and just how imperative it is that we continue to do that, that we continue to work together in the community, which we've done really well for a long time, both as individuals, as companies, and as organizations, and seeking out issues that we care about. And that part of the community today, I think it's really important to highlight that's still a big aspect of why people use Drupal.
Yeah, and it's kind of the origins of Drupal too. Is there a question in there?
Matthew? Oh, I was just going off on a rant.
No, but I think Drupal is just, let me comment real quick if that's okay. I think Drupal you know, can be and will always be very aligned with these kinds of organizations in terms of ideals, right? The openness and the transparency of open source and Drupal, as well as sort of the, I guess, the affordability. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but for a lot of these grassroots organizations or political activists or, you know, you name it, nonprofits in general, that's going to be always an important aspect, I imagine. So I don't see that changing. You know, we're always going to be open source. We're always going to be transparent, and hopefully we're always going to be affordable. So,
yeah, we have a lot of examples from the past. We've talked about Howard Dean in 2007, supporters of Hillary Clinton made a website for her with Drupal. GovCMS, which I know Acquia has been a big part of in Australia, and government has, you know, they've used Drupal to build their own distribution. And then recently some supporters of Michelle Obama created a draftobama.org to encourage her to run in 2020. So I see lots of evidence of this continuing. And honestly, a lot of the reason I know why some of those examples are happening was because Idris has been promoting them on his blog, and he talks about these examples. So I think that that's great. I want to make sure that Dries gets his credit there for promoting these kinds of things. I know you've written about them on Drupal Watchdog. You wrote about the civic space there. And I think other people, you know, I want to hear more stories. If I can do a little plug here, I'm going to reboot my Hacking Culture podcast and really try and focus on how people are using free software in Drupal for the public good. And if you are, I want to hear from you. I want to hear your stories. I want to share more of these stories and continue to promote this kind of activity in our community. So definitely get in touch if you are using Drupal because you believe in it, because you're mission oriented and you're trying to make the world a better place.
Yeah, recently, and this is kind of funny, I saw that, greatagain.gov, which is Donald Trump's transition website, was built in Drupal. So, yeah. I think that's the URL. So I don't know how you feel about that, Matthew Tift, but that's there too.
If that's any indication that they're going to continue to use Drupal in the administration, in the government, in the United States, then I'm definitely in support of that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think Drupal is really strong there. I mean, has been and continues to be very strong in government. That, I don't know. This is not a official statistic, but I feel like Drupal powers like twice as many sites in government as all other CMSs combined. I mean, it's just everywhere in large amounts.
Yeah, if you look online at, I think it's on groups.drupal.org, they have lists of all of the cities and all of the governments that are using Drupal as their platform of choice or somewhere in their government. And it's a really long list of governments. I don't want to throw out percentages, but, you know, we're talking like hundreds of cities and, you know, maybe hundreds of governments too. I can't remember off the top of my head, but we've made some really great inroads there. And I think we can continue to build on that. I think we can continue to build tools that can help empower citizens. And I think that's honestly would be a great venue for people to find out, you know, how can I help? A lot of people I've talked to in the past week or so have been trying to figure out ways that they can help. How can I help? And I think in local communities, that's a great way that we can sort of build on the success that we've had using Drupal and trying to get out good information. Another one of my big passions these days is for independent journalism. Some of the statistics I've seen about, for example, the mainstream media not spending more than, I think it's 32 minutes in total in the United States talking about policies during the evening news. I mean, things like that blow my mind. And as sometimes we think of Drupal as this huge global movement, but I look just in my own community. I live now in Minnesota, and I'm from Minnesota. And, you know, we have an organization called MinPost that provides nonprofit, nonpartisan journalism online, and they use Drupal. And Minnesota Public Radio has used Drupal, and Public Radio International is based in Minneapolis, and they use Drupal, and American Public Media, and St. Paul Neighborhood Network. You know, all of these local organizations in my community use Drupal and have this message where they want to get out good information. They want journalism. They want, you know, the dissemination and production and dissemination of journal of political information as journalism, and they're using Drupal for that. So, you know, you can see that too on a broader scale, like the freepress.net is an organization that helps give people a voice in the political process, and they're using Drupal. So I think helping in our local communities and helping those groups that already have Drupal sites, I mean, that's a great place to volunteer to help to promote independent journalism so we can help continue to have this check on the large corporations and governments in our country. And that's one of the main functions of a democracy, and journalism is there, and we have half the number of journalists that we did in the 1970s. So we can support that in our community by building Drupal sites or helping other organizations in our own communities build and make their Drupal sites better and share those tools in the broader community.
What kind of Drupal challenges are there to that prevent this kind of thing from happening right now? What is Drupal doing wrong, or what can Drupal do better to encourage further growth and that kind of thing right now?
Well, okay, I'll answer, because I've got some ideas, and maybe you can respond to this. But like, there's a great initiative in the Drupal community right now called Drutopia, and what they want to do is create another distribution. Again, Dries has been talking about distributions for years since the Civic Space came out of the Dean Space, and that was, I think, the first Drupal distribution around 2004 or 5. And the Drutopia people are very mission-oriented people, and they've identified a problem that some people find Drupal to be too technically challenging. So they want to create a cooperatively owned Drupal distribution and a way to give these grassroots organizations a way to organize without necessarily having the technical skills, but then by all of them committing some money, they all can benefit from the different features that get added, and that's how they want to work. So the challenge they've identified is that there's easier ways to do things that don't use free software. We see this a lot with people thinking the only way they can organize an event is on Facebook. Yeah. And that to me is one of our biggest problems, that people are considering that they have to stay in this walled garden of Facebook if they want to reach the people, and rather than creating events in their community and sharing them on the open internet and promoting, you know, free and open access to information, they you know, organize against some of these issues on Facebook. And to me, that is sort of an inhibitor to some of the things that I think a lot of people are using Drupal for now.
So Drupal was technically challenging, so they're trying to find an easier way to do it?
Yes.
So Dries, would you respond? I mean, can
yeah, I mean, I think one of Drupal's biggest challenges in general, not just for these organizations specifically, is our user experience, right? I think there's a lot of reasons why Drupal is better than most of our competitors or all of our competitors. But user experience is not typically an area where Drupal wins. And so I think that's... I mean, it's great that they're doing that as part of Drutopia, but I think some of this would benefit everyone, organizations small and large. And, you know, it's actually an area where we have been sort of making good progress, but we obviously have more to do. Like, we've made a lot of progress, I feel, in Drupal 8 with user experience, where we, you know, we started doing like in-place editing. We introduced a WYSIWYG editor. We redesigned content creation pages and, you know, lots of other things. And now in Drupal, you know, post Drupal 8, let's say, you know, we're working on, you know, sort of outside in initiatives where we introduced this settings tray that, that comes out from the sidebar and allows people to make changes in line with hopefully sort of real-time preview of their changes. Or the work we're doing on the blocks and layouts initiative, or the work that Pfizer is sponsoring on the workflows, and the things that we're starting up on media. You know, I wanted to introduce a media library and make it easier to manage and share images and video in Drupal. So all of these things, obviously, you can do today, but what all of these initiatives have in common is they try to bring these capabilities into Drupal core so it becomes easier for people to, you know, to use them, because, you know, finding the right modules and configuring the modules can be difficult. And by bringing them into core, we remove a number of sort of hurdles. And then as we bring them into core, we're spending a lot of time and effort in making it easier to use as well. You know, rethinking some of the usability patterns and how these things work. And yeah. So it is a challenge, usability, but I also think it's probably the area where we're, you know, focused on the most.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had, and just for and, listeners, we had
something that a lot of people can help with. So please come and help.
And it's a huge opportunity for Drupal to grow and to, you know, change and, you know, live in the future. And we'll talk about that coming up right after this.
What's happening?
Hey, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
It's Brian Scourin, president of Lullabot.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's Helena McCabe. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Helena, you're a front-end developer at Lullabot, right?
Indeed.
And one of the hats you wear, you're one of the Accessibots.
Yes.
So the Accessibots, a team of Lullabots that care about accessibility and how people use your website and how people can interact with your website. Tell me about that.
It's pretty much that. We're a working group that's dedicated to making the internet awesome for everyone. So whether you can see the screen or use a mouse or not, it's important that you be able to use our sites anyway. And we're pretty dedicated to that.
So how have you been able to bring your knowledge and your expertise about accessibility into your job as a front-end dev at Lullabot?
Oh, I just badger everyone relentlessly. That's most of what I do. you know, it's about being aware of it and pushing for it. As far as actually implementing it, it's not difficult.
Brian, how does that work with clients? Is it something that they've come to Lullabot and asked us about? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had people reach out to us specifically for accessibility work. And we welcome those types of inquiries. And also, as Helena was referring to, it ends up oftentimes being part of the work that we do. Like, for instance, in a broader project, accessibility may be a concern. And, you know, while we are working to uphold deadlines and launch sites and you know, create an amazing product, what we like to do in a perfect world is build those web experiences and build those products friendly toward accessibility best practices, and to advise and empower our clients on those best practices as we go through the relentless badgering that Helena mentioned. Although it's not quite as badgering and not quite as relentless. She's actually pretty friendly.
I try to make it enjoyable badgering where I can.
I know that if I'm building an element of a website, it's not that I you know, wanted to build it so it wasn't accessible to a screen reader. It's just maybe I didn't know better.
Well, absolutely. I don't think anybody ever builds anything with the intention to exclude people with disabilities. I mean, no one's like, screw disabled people. I hate them. Let's exclude them. Usually it's just about oversight. And about time and budget. You know, do we have time to build in this feature? Can we manage to squeeze it in? You know, things like that.
In a lot of instances, being like abiding by and following accessibility best practices is actually good business too, because, you know, what you're doing by doing that is making your product and your website reach a wider audience. And, you know, oftentimes that audience is the audience that you want to reach and is willing to spend or be lucrative in some way that relates to your business.
Well, absolutely, Brian. I think what a lot of people don't realize when we talk about doing accessibility, I mean, most of our clients would never, ever allow their website to launch if it wouldn't work in, say, New York. But we actually have more people with a disability living in the country than we do people living in the state of New York. So it's a really large chunk of the market share that you're losing out on when you don't do accessibility work.
Helena, can you give us the one accessibility tip?
Ooh, just one. Make sure everything is keyboard accessible.
And Brian, if somebody wants to get in touch with Lullabot and get Helena on their side, how would they do that?
They can go to lullabot.com, and we have multiple ways to contact us, but you know, you can go straight to the contact page and see just about all of them. And otherwise, if you just want to send an email, you can always email sales@lullabot.com.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks Good for time. Having me on.
Welcome back to the Lullabot Podcast. We are talking with Dr. Matthew Tift and Dr. Dries Boitar about the past, present, and future of Drupal.
Mike, let me tell you, I was at a web developer meetup when I was living in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And they were saying, oh, what do you do? I said, well, I work at a company that primarily builds a lot of Drupal websites. And, you know, we work with a bunch of big companies. And, you know, I named some of the clients we were working with. And, oh, but you build Drupal? Yeah, I build Drupal. Oh, I'm sorry. That was the response I got. And that was actually the first time I had heard that. And I had realized that Drupal wasn't cool anymore.
Why isn't it cool?
I don't know.
What happened?
Apparently there are other frameworks and there's new hotness that people really want to get into instead. So how do we make Drupal cool again?
Well, there's always been that, you know, where there's sort of the, whatever you want to call it, the 2% developer or the 5% developer that's can only work with the latest, most, you know, state-of-the-art technology, and everything else is not cool. I mean, for better or worse, a lot of developers are strongly opinionated. I think Drupal is still, you know, very cool, to be honest. You know, I think we're doing amazing things, sort of amazing users. We're doing more and more interesting things as well. And, you know, I think this is a very exciting time, at least in my mind, where we have all these new things are starting to come together in an interesting way. I feel like for the longest time, we were just building, you know, let's say normal websites, but now we have the, you know, things like voice assistants with Amazon Alexa or Google Home. We have chatbots like, you know, Facebook chatbot. We have machine learning. We have all these new devices, watches, and kiosks that Drupal is starting to power. I don't know. I feel like with Drupal 8, we've made so many great changes that have really allowed us to make a leap forward in things we can do and being recognized for that. So I think, you know, maybe we need like a marketing message along the lines of, you know, if you haven't looked at Drupal lately, you should look at it again, you know, because Drupal 8 isn't a Drupal that, you know, you may know. There's so much change. It's not the Drupal it used to be.
Yeah, it's. I was going to say it's not your grandfather's Drupal, but that's a little bit too far.
Yeah.
So what's Drupal's biggest challenge? Like, what's Drupal 8's biggest challenge going forward?
Drupal 8?
Or Drupal as a project.
Yeah, well, I'm not entirely sure what's the biggest challenge, but I think there's a number of challenges. I think usability of Drupal, and I mean it in the broad sense, you know, the authoring experience, making it very easy and intuitive for content creators as well as site builders, I think is a great opportunity. If we can crack that code and if we can make really big progress there, I think that would be absolutely game-changing. And I'm excited for all the work we're doing in that area. You know, I feel like we're able to make good progress there. I think another challenge is just sort of the speed of innovation, right? I mentioned some of the things just now, like machine learning, Internet of Things, all these different devices, conversational UIs. I mean, there's so many new things coming together, and the challenge is to embrace that innovation and to make sure that Drupal can play in that world. But again, I feel really good about where we are. I think we're ahead of our competitors in terms of being able to embrace these things. So Nonetheless, it will be a challenge because the speed of innovation will only increase, right? And as a community, we need to figure out ways to keep up with that that innovation. And if we can, and I believe we can, that actually gives us a huge advantage because proprietary competitors who don't have thousands of people contributing to their product, you know, they may have 50 engineers, 100 engineers, maybe 200 engineers. For them, it's even going to be more challenging to keep up with the growing pace of innovation. So I think our challenges are also our biggest opportunities and could really, really differentiate Drupal from the rest.
I think what you just said, though, Drupal has some strengths, and that actually plays into being a weakness for your last two examples. So because Drupal doesn't make a whole lot of assumptions about what you're actually building, Drupal will do very well in the Internet of Things or chatbots or whatever future technology turns out to be cool, because Drupal can be integrated with all of those things. But at the same time, when you're talking about like a Drupal authoring experience or usability, because Drupal isn't making as many assumptions as some of the other products do, it's harder to assume what the author is wants. So I've built several different types of websites that, you know, maybe a node form has 300 fields, or maybe a node form only has, you know, a file and a title, and it's hard to give a good authoring experience when you don't necessarily know what type of author you're building for.
Yeah, no, that is very hard. And that is sort of the challenge that we have, right? I do think there's a lot of things we can do that are generic enough, that benefit all the use cases or all the possible use cases of Drupal, like some of the work we're doing on with outside in and the settings tray, or some of the improvements to blocks and layouts, or even like the media library, I think are sort of generic improvements that benefit, let's say, almost everyone. Maybe not everyone, but a lot of them. So I feel good about that. And, you know, the other side is there where we do have to customize for the use case. I think we need to make sure we have sort of the right framework that allows that customization to be, you know, easy, you know, quick and easy. And I think there is also work we can do there.
I do want to point out, I think my example of 300 fields is a little bit bananas. But...
I was gonna say something. I would not want to build out that.
Maybe 300 discrete places where somebody has to make a decision. I don't know, but yeah. not that many fields.
I guess I would answer that question slightly differently, which is maybe not a surprise. But one of the great things about Drupal, I think, is that when we get together as a community and we talk out our differences, we have these endless conversations and issue queues, and we have this ability to help people come into the community and make their voices known. And sometimes we make that hard, and other times we make that almost too easy. The point is, we've had an unofficial slogan for a long time in the community, which is "Come for the code and stay for the community." Mm-hmm. And I feel like a challenge for us now is continuing to keep a focus on the people in the community and encourage that. So Dries and I, a little plug here, we started looking at some data about commit credits, about people that were contributing to the project. And we looked specifically at corporate sponsorship on our, or not corporate sponsorship, we called that like commercial support. But I think that the title of the article was "Who Sponsors Drupal?" And it's all over the internet on Drupal.org and Dries' site and Lullabot and my site. And go read it. And you can find out more about like who is contributing to the community. But Dries and I both agree that it's great to have people getting paid by their employer to contribute to this project, to give code that helps everyone. And we want to continue that. And we want to do that in a way where we can continue to have a diverse community. And that's one of the next issues that I think Dries and I are going to be working on. I've started looking at the data, and that, you know, our community is in diverse in ideas, and we're not necessarily diverse in other areas such as gender and race and those kinds of issues. So finding ways to make sure that we continue to be a welcoming community for people that are interested in working together, I think is something that we need to continue to focus on. A lot of times we want to take the focus off that on and thinking about what the next cool technical feature is. But I feel like we're going to, I personally, you know, I'm not speaking for I want to make sure I'm not speaking for Dries here, but he might agree or might not, but that we want that's a key thing that we need to do is continue to make the community welcoming to all kinds of contributors who want to contribute in our group of people that are working together.
I totally agree. Well, let me table the diversity statement for a second and just connect a couple of the dots that I heard, which is, you know, how can we make Drupal cool again? And this notion of people being paid to work on Drupal. And I feel like there's this misconception almost in the community around, you know, Drupal having a strong history of hobbyists. And today, maybe we have fewer hobbyists. I mean, we do have fewer hobbyists. And that being somehow negative. And I don't think it's necessarily negative. Like, I think personally, I see a lot of people that have a professional career with Drupal, and I think it's great. I mean, it's great that they can do Drupal and make money, you know, and provide for their families. And it's not like these people are less passionate about Drupal than hobbyists are. I mean, I've seen amazing people that are doing full-time work with Drupal, or to make a living with Drupal. And they're so passionate about Drupal. So there's this, I don't know what it is. I need to think a little bit about it more, but there's this concept that losing hobbyists is a bad thing, or that it's maybe less passionate or less cool. But that's not at all what I see when I talk to people.
Let's bring back up the topic of diversity.
Sure.
How do we encourage that?
So, I have a question on top of yours,
okay,
Matt Cleave. So, in Enzo Garcia's keynote in DrupalCon Dublin, he was talking about his kind of trip around the world, and he was talking about, you know, encouraging Drupal users from, you know, other countries outside of North America and Europe, and so obviously that relates directly into diversity. You know, if we could involve, you know, more of Asia, more of Africa, more of South America, how can that be done to increase diversity?
Yeah, I mean, the topic of diversity is obviously very complex.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of sort of geographic diversity, well, first of all, regardless of geographic diversity or gender diversity or, you know, other kinds of diversity, I do feel like we really try to foster a culture of diversity and inclusiveness in the Drupal community. I take pride in that, and I also will, you know, stand up for it and address things when I see that they are not proper or not in line with our values. And so we've done things like created a code of conduct. We've done things like we have a community working group. So we've done all, you know, various things which are non-trivial to do and are actually hard work to make sure that we do foster that right culture, you know, a culture of diversity and inclusiveness. In terms of, you know, geographic diversity, I think, for example, with the Drupal Association as a board, we have a strong desire to try and bring DrupalCon as an example to, you know, Latin America or Asia, to try and bring more of and hopefully at some point Africa, to bring more people in our community and to show them as well, you know, for us to go there, so to speak, and to mix with them and to share knowledge and best practices and, you know, things that could help them grow Drupal, and vice versa, to learn from them as well. You know, in my travels, I've learned amazing things about how different communities work. Like, you know, it's very clear. I was in Japan 3 weeks ago, and I even went to China a couple years ago, and there's huge language barriers, for example, which, you know, prevent some of that to happen. And it's almost crazy because all they need is maybe one good book on Drupal in Chinese or written in Japanese. And it literally takes, I don't know, it probably takes somebody a couple of months of work to translate an existing book, you know, and it would be a game changer in some of these countries.
Sounds like you need to convince somebody to quit their job, Dries.
And write a book. Yeah, no, I think there's fairly simple things that we could do that I think have sort of a huge impact for the amount of work. As an example.
I tend to bring it back to my local community, and I we have these global issues that we can work on together that I think are important. I also feel strongly that, you know, me being in my daughter's schools and me volunteering at the schools in my community, and or I help organize the Twin Cities Drupal Camp and creating a place where people can come and learn about free software or Drupal and together, and seeing how much fun we have. You know, I go to career fairs. I teach kids how to use Finch robots and things like that. But then, you know, I'll often make a little plug for, here's what I do. I work at home. I get to hang out with my kids every day and bring them to the bus stop, and I get to have this free time. But then I also get to travel around the world and work with other people from countries all around the world. And I make that case to, you know, to people in my community, and try and encourage, and usually most people have no idea what Drupal is, free software, yeah, or the principles that we have. But I feel myself as, you know, the ambassador to my local community, and all of you out there that, again, feel like you want to do something. Teaching kids to code is a great thing, because you can empower people with a new skill. And it's not the only way, but it's one way that we can help encourage diversity, and, you know, inviting people to friends and people to user groups and that kind of thing, I think can help with create more diversity in our community.
Yeah, Matthew Tift gave a great keynote at the Drupal Camp Colorado several years ago about teaching kids how to code, and we'll include a link to that. It was fantastic and really, really great. Yeah. Dries, do you still have the hard stop?
I do. I'm sorry.
We'll ask you one more question, Dries. This is a question we actually asked to Ted Bowman and Kevin O'Leary. We had a podcast about user experience, and so the question is, if you could snap your fingers and have a magical Drupal genie add a feature into Drupal, and it would be accepted and loved by the community, and you work very well and just perfect with no code defects, what would that be?
Wow. that's a great question. There's several things that come to mind. I guess I have to pick one.
You can talk about them all. I'm curious.
You know, pretty quickly, I mean, I'll tell you what comes to mind, and then maybe by talking about it, I can pick one. But one thing that comes to mind is improving the user experience of Drupal. It's not really a feature, but sort of a. But that would be, I think, very impactful. I'm thinking about sort of upgrading, the top 50 contributed modules from Drupal 7 to Drupal 8. I think that would be very impactful in the short term. And I'm also thinking about the survey results. I did this big survey. Over 3,000 people chimed in. And the number one thing was improved media management in Drupal, the media library and image handling and these kinds of things. So these are three things that kind of come to mind. I guess I'll have to go with the media stuff, you know, go with the vote of the people.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what, it's funny. When I was doing the research from the podcast 10 years ago, you did mention media back then too, which is finally, you know, it appears to be happening with the media initiative.
Yes,
yeah, so that's exciting.
Yeah, we're going to get it done.
Yes. Yes, finally.
Yes. make Drupal great again.
Yes, again.
Or cool again.
Yeah.
So Matthew, tell me, what would the Drupal genie do for you?
Well, I think that one thing comes to mind, and since I have long held this opinion that what we do in the Drupal is more than just about the technology, if I had to add a feature to Drupal core, I would think it would be something along the lines of a big button or maybe a welcome screen that when you install Drupal, it says something like, Drupal is more than just a CMS. It's a movement. We are here to work together. We're a community of people working together. We hope you join us. We hope you contribute to our community, and we hope you treat others with respect. Something along those lines, I think, would help send the message when somebody downloaded Drupal that right away, this is what we stand for. And maybe the specific text of the message would not just be something that I have come up with, but we have come up with as a community, but something that says we stand for something. We have other messages like that in our code of conduct. Mm-hmm. So perhaps we could borrow phrases from that and talk about the importance of that. We have a lot of people in our community, I think, that believe these. I know, for example, on Lullabot, we have phrases on our site that say things like, if you're a good human being, we enjoy working with you. Or we talk about how we want to work with organizations that affect positive change in the world. Like, these are phrases we have on our Lullabot website. We're a commercial company, but we do have core values. We stand for something. We're not simply just technology. So Lullabot, like the whole Drupal community, stands for something, and we'd love to work with you. It's not just that we're doing this because we want to share code. It's because we want to work together to create positive change in the world. And let's make that be the feature of Drupal that people most associate with it.
I love that. You know, something that I've thought that would that kind of goes into that is maybe have the installer pull down, like, you know, a small JSON file with upcoming Drupal camps or something like that, and, you know, do some geolocation and say, hey, we see that there's, you know, you appear to be in Ohio, and there's a Drupal camp coming up here in Columbus in 2 months. Here's the website if you're interested. Cool. You know, there's nothing stopping Drupal from doing that during the install process. That was a great answer, Matthew.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jace.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity. It's always fun to be on, and looking forward to our next one.
Yeah, 2026. We'll send you the invite. Thank
Maybe
you, Matthew.
We should do a couple in between.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt Tift. It's always great having your voice on the podcast, and looking forward to the reboot of Hacking Culture.
Thank you.
When are you starting that?
Soon.
Soon.
That's a Drupal answer. When it's done.
within the month.
Okay.
Holy cow.